Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic.
It is my pleasure to welcome back Nancy Regan to the podcast. Welcome back, Nancy.
Hi, James. Thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
So, Nancy, you've been on the podcast before. We've talked about RCM, but just in case people aren't familiar with who you are, you have over 20 years' experience of a hands-on practice facilitating RCM. That's a tremendous amount of experience. You've done it in the U.S. Navy, U.S. Army. You've also are the founder of RCM Training Online. You've also authored a book on RCM as well. What did I not cover in that very brief intro that you want to fill in?
Well, you know, so yes, that's my RCM career in a nutshell, but something that I've been thinking back on lately is when I first started working at the Naval Air Warfare Center in Lakehurst, New Jersey, and that's where I started doing RCM, I was a logistics intern, and truth be told, I was a little bored. And one day, my supervisor called me into his office, and he said, Nancy, we've been tasked from above to do reliability-centered maintenance on our equipment to reduce maintenance costs. So I'm sitting there and I have my notebook on my lap and I write down reliability centered. What did he say? I think he said maintenance, and I write down maintenance. He said, I need you to go figure out what that is and what we have to do to implement it. So how was I to know that this 10-minute meeting on an otherwise ordinary day in August 1997 would set the trajectory for my career and really the rest of my life? So I think that it's really remarkable what happens with life, you know, that it just kind of places the people and the circumstances and the events in our paths that take us where we need to go. And so that was an unremarkable day, but a remarkable thing that happened to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, 20 years experience doing RCM, doing it well, being involved with it. You know, I remember in a past podcast, you talked about being mentored by the late John Mowbray. You know, having that opportunity, I think that's absolutely fantastic.
Yes, that is one of my life's greatest gifts, is that he, I guess he saw something in me, and I was lucky enough to have been mentored by him. And I'm grateful for that every day, because, you know, he taught me what I know. He taught me my craft, and for that, I am sincerely grateful.
All right. Excellent. Now, for those that maybe aren't familiar with RCM or don't have a great understanding of it, what is reliability-centered maintenance?
Okay, so in a nutshell, really, reliability-centered maintenance is a philosophy. And it's a philosophy, it's a philosophy that is rooted in the fundamentals of maintenance and reliability. And some people don't know that these principles are actually over 50 years old. Now, specifically, RCM is a 7-step process, and we can use it to figure out what kind of proactive maintenance or other actions, like maybe change a training program or institute a new operating procedure, things that an organization needs to do to manage the failure modes associated with a piece of equipment. So the first 4 steps make up the FMEA, or the failure modes and effects analysis. And when you add step 5 into that, you get the FMECA, or the failure modes, effects, and criticality analysis. Step 6 is when we figure out if there's any proactive maintenance that we should do. And step 7 is when we figure out if there are any of those other actions we should do. So one of the major products of an RCM analysis is an optimized proactive maintenance plan. So a lot of times people will say, well, you know, should I do RCM, but I really need to optimize my maintenance. But that's one of the things that you get when you do RCM correctly. Likewise, a common misconception about the process is, well, I should do FMEA or should I do RCM? But FEMEA, FEMICA, and condition-based maintenance, all of that is part of the RCM philosophy. So when you do RCM, you're doing it all.
So essentially, it solves all the problems and eliminates many of the issues we're trying to sort out. Do we use FMEA? Do we use PM optimization? Do we use this? Do we use that? RCM covers it all.
Exactly. Yep, it sure does.
All right, excellent. Now, you know, I have my experience with RCM, whether it's teaching the principles of it, whether it's facilitating some of the events. And one of the key things you need to do in RCM is understand the functions of the equipment. Now, what is a function?
Okay, I get really excited when I get to talk about functions, because functions are where it all begins. It's one of the most important steps in the RCM process, because this is where an organization defines reliability. So what John Mowbray taught me is that reliability isn't a thing on its own, but rather reliability is sprinkled amongst all of the functions of a piece of equipment. So it makes sense that that's where we would start when we do reliability-centered maintenance. And basically, when we write a function, we're just identifying or articulating or specifying what we need from our equipment. But what's really important is to make that distinction that we record what we need from the equipment. We're not recording design specs or what, say, a design engineer intended a piece of equipment to be used for. So for example, if we were to analyze a compressor that's part of a plant air system, then we wouldn't write our function like this: to deliver compressed air to the tank. So, you know, that's vague, and that describes a lot of different compressors. We need to be more specific, because again, we're defining the kind of reliability that we want from our compressor. So we might write something like, to provide compressed air that's oil-free at less than 95 degrees Fahrenheit at a minimum of, say, 3,500 standard cubic feet per minute. And then we have to specify the output pressure. Maybe that's 100 PSIG. And to make up this compressor's portion of maintaining, say, 10,500 standard cubic feet per minute and 90 PSIG header pressure to the plant. So you can see how we were very specific about what we need from this compressor to make up its portion of the plant air. And that's what I mean by reliability. You know, if our compressor does that, well, then probably if you asked people in the plant, hey, you know, how's that compressor? Is it reliable? They would probably say, yeah, it's pretty reliable, but that's because it's doing what we need to make up its portion of the plant air to the plant.
All right. So you covered a couple things there. Not only was it what we bought the compressor to do, which was to supply air, but also the quality of that air, the temperature of the air, the operating pressures of the air. Why do we have to identify all that? Why can't we just say to provide air?
Okay, it is so important, because when we go down the line in the RCM process and we start to write failure modes, or in other words, identifying specific causes of failure, we are identifying what would cause us not to have that function. So when our function is vague, then it's very difficult to, you know, get our failure modes to write our failure modes properly, and then even further into the process, identifying, you know, failure consequences. For example, what does it mean to the plant, or what does it mean to the downstream process? Well, we don't know, because we didn't really identify what that was in our function. But another key thing about writing functions is that it allows us to do a double check to make sure that our equipment can even do what we need from the outset. Now, you may think that that is like really simple and common sense, and it is, but it's so simple that it is often overlooked in our industry. And so oftentimes we put a piece of equipment into service and we ask it to do something that it can't. But, you know, we're kind of, you know, at at a much higher level in our thinking, so we're not seeing the simple stuff. So that's another really important reason for functions.
All right, so we need the functions to help us define what are the functional failures, failure modes, what we're going to do about them, understand if it really is that functional failure. You know, if we're delivering 95 PSI and not 99, is that really going to impact us? And we need functions to understand that, correct?
Yeah, exactly.
All right, perfect. So oftentimes when you read about functions, you hear about primary and secondary functions. What is a primary versus a secondary function, and what are the differences between them?
Okay, yes. So a primary function, quite simply, it's the main reason that the asset exists, like we just talked about the compressor. But most of the time when it comes to our equipment, we need it to do a lot of other things, like indicate operating pressures and operating temperatures, and we need it to contain fluids. And then we've got devices that keep us safe in the event that something else goes wrong, like pressure safety valves and emergency stops. So all of these equipment features play a part in our equipment reliability. So we have to make sure that we take care of them properly as well. And that also starts by writing functions. So, you know, one may say that, well, the primary function is the most important, and oftentimes it is, but sometimes secondary functions can be equally as important, if not more important.
All right, excellent. So the secondary functions, you know, they're not the reason why we bought the equipment, but they're the things that either support that main function or things that keep us safe.
Yes, that's a great way of putting it.
All right, excellent. Now, I know I'm going to mess it up, but I remember there was an acronym that I learned once upon a time about secondary functions. And I can remember what the acronym is, but I don't remember what they all mean. And that is PEACHES. Have you ever heard of that?
PEACHES? No, I've never heard of PEACHES. John Mowbray taught us ESCAPES. But no, I've never heard of PEACHES.
All right. Well, I'll do my best to communicate PEACHES, and then I'll have you do ESCAPES. So PEACHES stands for protection. I think it was environment, appearance, control, health. I can't remember what that second E is. And then the S was superior functions or that sort of thing. I'm struggling with that last E is now.
You know what? I think it's pretty much the same thing, because with ESCAPES, it's environmental integrity, safety, structural integrity, control, containment, comfort, appearance, protection. And I think the other E maybe that you're looking for is economy and efficiency.
Yes, that is it.
And the S is superfluous functions.
Yes. Okay.
Yep.
So when people are trying to identify those secondary functions, those are all the different things they need to consider, right?
Yes.
All right. Now, why would we consider appearance as a secondary function?
You know, it would depend on what the equipment is and what organization is doing the RCM analysis. Because, like, for example, let's say if you're doing an analysis with a commercial airline, you know, the appearance of their plane is important, because if I'm going down the jetway and the paint is all peeling and it's, you know, ugly looking, it might make me feel unsafe to be on it. And, you know, it could affect an organization's reputation. You know, in another case, you know, maybe for our compressor that we're talking about, maybe appearance doesn't matter at all. So it really depends. So when we talk about PEACHES or ESCAPES, that's not necessarily saying you have to have a function for all of that. It's really just a way to kind of jog someone's memory. Is there a function associated with appearance that we should be writing?
All right, excellent. Now, I know appearance, I've seen that used in the aspect of making sure that, you know, we have paint in place to protect against corrosion. So they use that as the secondary thing to protect against, you know, that other failure mechanism that's there.
Yep.
So we go through, we identify all these functions, whether they're primary or secondary functions. Then we have to identify something called a functional failure. Now, what is a functional failure?
Yes, okay. So a functional failure is the inability to fulfill a function. And, you know, oftentimes in an OSEM analysis, if I had to say which step is the easiest one, I would probably say functional failures, because oftentimes it's just the negative of the function. But, you know, sometimes they can get a little more involved. But what is another reason why it's important to make sure we write our functional failures well and properly is because it allows us to bookkeep our analysis properly. It allows our FMEA or our failure modes and effects analysis to take shape. And so it's bookkeeping our analysis, just like debits and credits do for an accounting system. We also have to properly bookkeep our information in an OSEM analysis. And functional failures help us to do that.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com.
Now, with functional failures, I've always gone by the mantra that there's three types of functional failures. Is that true? Or how many should we have for each function out there?
Well, I mean, when I teach, I teach, we generally have total failures and we have partial failures. So completely unable to do something, like, for example, with our compressor, we could, I don't know, like, let's say the electric motor fails. Well, we're completely able to provide compressed air. But, you know, if a temperature gauge fails, well, our compressor can still do what it needs to do. We just can't read, you know, particular operating temperatures, for example. And that could have, that does have effects and certain consequences. And that's what the LCM analysis is for. So generally, I teach total and partial.
Okay. I've always heard of, you know, your total failure. But at partial, I've always broken that out into two, either too much or too little of whatever that function is. Because in some circumstances, like a compressor, having too much volume might not be a problem, but having too much pressure may be a problem. So I've always thought of it that way. Have you seen it?
That approach? Yes, I've never articulated it that way, but I love that. That would be a great way to teach someone. Yeah, that's, yes, that's what I, when I say partial failures, I guess it encompasses that, but I never quite articulated it like that. I like that.
Excellent. So you say identifying those functional failures is one of the easier steps of the RCM analysis. But in order to do that well, we really got to nail down the functions. And I find a lot of organizations struggle with nailing down the functions. So what can the facilitator do to make sure we get good quality functions in our analysis, making sure we cover not just the primary, but also all those secondary things that we need to be aware of?
Okay, yes. So the number one obvious thing that I would absolutely recommend is to make sure that you have an experienced facilitator leading a team. You know, reliability-centered maintenance it's simple. It's a simple process, but it is not always easy. It's very important that the facilitator is very well versed in the principles and that the team that the facilitator is leading has a good introductory a good knowledge about the fundamentals of OSEM. They don't have to know as much as the facilitator. So assuming that the facilitator and the team are properly trained and experienced, then I like to use a couple of techniques. One is what I call the go-around technique. I like to project schematics and drawings or pitches and quite literally, you know, go around it with my team. And it's just like a visual and it helps to brainstorm failure modes. Another facilitation technique is that a facilitator is trained to really listen to the working group. Even before functions are written, when we're going through the document that we draft first called the operating context, a lot of issues come to light and a lot of discussions happen with the working group members. And a good facilitator is taking notes during that time because he or she is thinking, we should turn that into a function. Because any issues that the organization is having with respect to the piece of equipment can be captured in an analysis. It could be something maybe that the equipment can't do, but that they need it to do. So it could be like a wish list sort of a function. Or maybe it comes to light that a machine is being operated wrongly. And so a facilitator knows how to lead a team into turning that into a function. So those would be the three or four things I would say are the most important tricks or techniques to identify functions.
All right. You touched on a very important piece there. You talked about the operating context. So the operating context is, you know, how we use that equipment, where it's set up, what process is it used in, all that different stuff. Why is that important to help us identify functions?
Okay, it is. I love the part of the process that we start with is with the operating context, and I love this for several reasons. It doesn't matter if you have a person who's been, say, operating that equipment for 30 years. There's always something that comes up that people learn about the equipment, because when you have, for example, the operator and the maintainer and the engineer, and you have all these different perspectives that come together, there's all kinds of learning that goes on. And oftentimes, that would be a point in the analysis, either that or writing functions, where the cause for chronic failure is actually identified. Maybe it was being operated incorrectly, or they're asking it to do too much. But another thing that the operating context does is it's an easy way for the team to get warmed up to each other. You know, because when we do that, we're reading through like a theory of operation, and we're reviewing the major components of the equipment. Now, when you get a team like this together, quite often, you know, the operator has never worked in a formal process with the engineer. So that, that environment is foreign oftentimes to people doing RCM. So it's also a time where people can just get to know each other and get to understand the equipment better. And that understanding of the equipment translates into the functions.
All right, excellent. So it gives us a good understanding of the equipment, how it's used, and we can use that to better identify those specific primary and secondary functions.
Yes.
Excellent. All right. Now, what is the one trick, if you had to pick one, that helps people through identifying those functions, whether they're primary or secondary? What is the one thing they need to do to get better at that?
Okay, the one thing that they need to do is to get out of thinking of design mode and what the manual or the drawing says it can do, and switch their thinking to what they need it to do. That is the number one trick. And that's another reason why a trained facilitator is so important, because a facilitator is trained to pick up on, you know, when someone is kind of, you know, tracking down the road of, well, this is what it was designed to do, and pull them back in and say, no, you know, what do we need it to do? I think it's a mindset shift. That's the most important thing.
All right, excellent. So we're focused, the functions are focused on what we need it to do, not what it's designed to do. So if we need 100 gallons per minute, but the pump was designed for 125, our function statement is at 100 gallons per minute, not the 125.
Yes.
All right.
Yep.
Excellent. Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change regarding how organizations not only define functions, but kind of lead that whole process of defining them?
Okay. I love this. I get a magic wand in this. Okay. If I had a magic wand, here's what I think. I would have people thinking that although we can get really theoretical about reliability, I would wave my magic wand and have people stop thinking about reliability also in a practical way, because reliability is very practical. It's simple. It's not always easy, but it's simple. I mean, because simply put, it's what you need from your equipment. If your equipment does day after day, if it gives you what you need, you're going to walk around and say, my equipment is reliable. And the way to articulate that is by writing functions. So it's a very practical exercise that, like I mentioned before, that too often isn't done by organizations. And it's and you know, when people embark upon, for example, a FMEA or a Philly Modes and Effects Analysis or RCM, writing functions is often considered like a matter of routine, and they're just written quickly with little detail, because a lot of times people think, you know, the real magic is in the failure modes or the causes of failure, and that is an absolutely an important part of the process. But if your foundation is weak with weak functions, then the rest of the analysis is going to be weak. So I would say, with my magic wand, start thinking about reliability in a practical way as well.
All right, excellent. Now, you know, we've talked a lot about RCM, functions, functional failures. What is the one thing you want our listeners to take away from this conversation? What can they do differently tomorrow? What do you want them to go do with what we've talked about today?
Okay, you know, I find that a lot of people I meet, a lot of people will say they've heard that RCM doesn't work, or they've heard negative stuff about it, like it's too expensive, or it takes too long, or you don't get the results you need from it. And I mean, I can say with 100% certainty that if RCM was too expensive, or it took too long, or an organization didn't get the results they needed, it's probably because RCM wasn't applied correctly or with the right people. You know, early in my RCM career, I collaborated with the Royal Navy's RCM program. And I remember being at a team dinner in Bath, England, and Commander Andrew Mattis leaned in and he looked at me. We were talking about RCM, and I guess I was getting technical about it. And he leaned in and he said, you know, Nancy, RCM is nothing more than common sense applied to physical assets. And I never forgot that moment. So I think to a large degree, people complicate RCM when they don't apply it correctly. You know, they get into analysis paralysis, functions are too vague, failure modes are too detailed. So I think the one action would be to know that RCM does work when it's applied correctly.
And I think that's key, when it's applied correctly. And I think in previously you mentioned another key point, which was having a well-trained facilitator. If we don't apply RCM correctly, we don't have a good facilitator, it can easily become one of those activities that is never ending and yields no results. And I think that's why people that have that bad taste, they either didn't have it apply properly or they had a bad facilitator. Now, have you seen anything other than having a bad facilitator or improper application is why people don't like it?
Yeah, I think also they don't do it with the right people. You know, maybe they just have, you know, maybe an outside contractor, and they contract out their RCM. You know, it's just so important to get the people involved who really know it. And, you know, the other thing, if I could make one more point about, you know, like trained facilitators. I remember, you know, my father taught me how to drive. But before that, I took driver's ed, so that was classroom training. And so I learned the rules of the road, and I learned how to drive. But when I got my learner's permit and I got behind the wheel for the first time, I mean, my knees were knocking, my legs were shaking. I mean, I was really nervous, because there's a big difference between taking theoretical knowledge and then transferring it to practical application. And RCM is the same way. We can learn all day long, but you've got to get behind the wheel and you've got to actually drive to, you know, to enhance your skills. And RCM is that same way.
All right, excellent. Yes, no, couldn't agree more. Now, before you go, you know, you're an expert at RCM. you're constantly speaking, you have a website, you have a book. Where can people find out more about you, get in touch with you, learn more about how you can help them with RCM?
Well, I would love to connect with your listeners on LinkedIn. So if we're not connected, if they, I would invite them to go to my profile on LinkedIn. It's I'm Nancy Regan RCM, N-A-N-C-Y-R-E-G-A-N RCM. And they can also go to my website, which is rcmtrainingonline.com.
All right, excellent. I'll make sure to put links to that in the show notes so people can connect with you on LinkedIn, see those videos that you release every once in a while that everyone enjoys, or find out more about RCM Training Online.
Excellent.
So with that, are you going to be speaking anytime soon? I know you frequently do keynotes and other types of presentations. Are you going to be speaking again soon?
Yes, I have several things coming up. I'm going to be speaking at the Mainstream Conference in Australia in August, and I'm super excited for the SMRP conference. So I'm presenting, but I'm also running a workshop, and it is going to be like 20% about establishing our reliability goals, which is functions, but the other 80% is about achieving our own personal heart's desires. So that workshop will be on the Thursday, the last Thursday of the conference. And I'm super excited about that.
Excellent. Well, I will be sure to see you there. I have, I think, two papers at the conference and a workshop. So I will definitely see you there, and it'd be good to catch up.
Excellent. Yes, I look forward to it, James. Thank you so much. Thank you for this opportunity, and thank you for everyone who's listening.
All right, thank you very much, and you have yourself a great night.
All right, you too. Thank you.
I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.